Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of this Thursday edition of News on the Hill. I'm Brighton McConnell, your news director here at 97.9 The Hill. I'm substituting in for Andrew Stuckey, who is getting his long weekend started with some time off. We've got a busy 5 o'clock hour coming up, including a very full sports section, a sports report, and Art Chansky's Sports Notebook of the Day, talking about a very popular TV show. All will be revealed in a few minutes. Also, stick around. It is another Lumina ticket giveaway day, and I'll be sharing exactly what you need to do to enter a little bit later on in this 5 o'clock hour. Let's start with our local headlines, though, and it actually involves the state government, which has certainly been the theme this week. We know that the 2024 election cycle is going to be another heated and well-participated one here in North Carolina, and we learned today that one of the incumbent Supreme Court justices will not be seeking re-election next year. Associate Justice Mike Morgan said he will be leaving the court, but is keeping all of his options open, in his own words, when it comes to maybe considering serving the state in a different way. Morgan was elected to an 8-year term back in 2016, and at the time, it gave Democrats a majority on the Supreme Court for the first time in nearly two decades. That, of course, did change this past cycle as it returned to a 5-2 Republican majority. But that is going to be a very interesting race that we, of course, will be covering when the time comes. We do still have our local election season that is going to be happening before that and that we're following closely. Some news that was announced yesterday, Carrboro Town Councilmember Eleazar Posada said that he will be running for re-election, this time for a full term. If you remember, Posada was put into place to fill Damon Siles' seat with a special election a couple of years ago. Posada, the first Carrboro Town Councilmember to announce their plans to run again this fall. Moving over now to the North Carolina Senate, where the chamber passed its budget today. It had largely gotten up to the finish line with votes on Wednesday, but it did indeed cross that finish line today with a pass, an approval. It is a key step for the eventual expansion of Medicaid and raising pay for state employees, among many, many, many other things. But there are some major differences in the state budget compared to the House budget passed a couple weeks ago. So we are still a ways off from anything being finalized. A few things, though, that have jumped out in that Senate budget that people are reporting on: it does not have funding for several capital projects on UNC campus, and also includes recurring cuts to the UNC School of Law and School of Government. And that is different from the House budget, certainly something that we'll be following to see if it gets hammered out. One thing that both budgets do have, though, is funding for the university's potentially new School of Civic Life and Leadership. At the UNC Board of Trustees meeting today, UNC Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz announced that the school has indeed made its first faculty hire. Specifically, the Program for Public Discourse did. That's a project that started a couple of years ago, but will be housed and absorbed by the School of Civic Life and Leadership if it gets up and running. Now, that entire project is under fire from UNC's faculty for the trustees' support of creating it. It did seem to come out of the blue in January, which UNC's provost said was a bit premature by the trustees, since it has not passed through faculty governance and approval like all other schools on campus have. That process is still up in the air, but according to Chancellor Guskowitz today, as reported by the News and Observer, he said the School of Civic Life and Leadership could start enrolling people in classes as soon as next spring. Now, today's BOT meeting is the last before a summer break for the university, and focus, of course, is shifting to the new academic year. As this one ended, so did one of the biggest storylines to come from campus: the presence of lead in drinking water fixtures. We've been following this since last summer, and the university just last month finished testing every single fixture on campus. And officials yesterday made a presentation to the Board of Trustees about the water testing process, what was discovered, and where they go from here. UNC officials were alerted of traceable lead levels in August 2022 as a summer project for a department did water quality testing on Wilson Library. Soon after, the school's Environment, Health, and Safety Department began testing all the fixtures in every university building on or near campus. Across 7 months of testing, close to 3,800 fixtures had their drinking water tested for the toxic metal. Out of those, 420 returned lead levels UNC deemed necessary for remediation,
which is a rate of more than 10% of all fixtures. Kathy Brennan, the executive director of UNC's Environment, Health, and Safety team, told trustees on Wednesday that remediation is already complete for all affected fixtures in university housing. As of this week, 126 of those with lead have had parts replaced and upgraded after being taken offline following their tests.
We are remediating all fixtures that we found with greater than one part per billion of lead. Just to note, the EPA action level for public water authorities is actually 15 parts per billion. So we're going above and beyond by remediating things over one part per billion.
Daryl Jeter is the director of emergency management planning for the university. During Wednesday's presentation, he detailed and thanked the many teams from UNC that contributed to the testing and communication efforts. That included UNC professor and water quality expert Rebecca Fry, who Jeter said was instrumental in providing guidance to the university during testing. He also credited Fry's students, 29 of whom volunteered to help test more than a dozen campus buildings for lead.
And so not only did this contribute towards us achieving our goal in meeting the executive priorities, but it also provided them with real-world scientific experience. And so we want to thank Dr. Fry and the student volunteers for their efforts on that front.
Going forward, Brennan said UNC will not let its testing efforts be stagnant. Just as the university prioritized its oldest buildings during the initial lead testing efforts, her team will regularly check those facilities' fixtures from now on.
We are going to focus on buildings constructed pre-2014. That is when plumbing fixtures had a change in the amount of lead that could be present, and so we think those are the highest risk. And we are going to test fixtures at least once every 3 years, just to make sure that we're still seeing no lead.
When asked whether there is a timeline on when fixture remediation will be complete across UNC campus, Vice Chancellor for Risk Management George Battle said that is still unclear.
The testing part certainly was more amenable to doing quickly because there's a finite thing you would have to do as opposed to filtering or changing pipes or doing all of that kind of stuff. But I know that they're working as quickly as they possibly can.
One of the concerns UNC officials have shared through this testing process is how other schools with older buildings may have traces of lead too. When asked by trustees what information has been shared with other schools, Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz responded.
I have provided a high-level overview with the request of President Hans to the other system presidents, but I think we do need to put this into some sort of almost like a playbook-type document that we could provide for the other system schools so that they can be on the front end of this.
Once again, that is UNC Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz speaking there. And if you want to find more reporting on UNC's lead testing process and some big numbers that were presented to the Board of Trustees kind of wrapping up the project, you can head to our corresponding news article on chapelboro.com. Now, the Board of Trustees also heard a plea today from a representative of UNC graduate student workers. They're hoping that the board will pass a resolution in support of their efforts to overturn a collective bargaining ban at the state legislature level. UNC Workers Union, which is UE 150, is pushing for better pay and working conditions, and they say the best way to try and ensure those is collectively bargaining with the university, but that is at the moment outlawed by state law. To bring attention to this, a dozen union members and supporters stood outside the Carolina Inn yesterday as the Board of Trustees was inside for its committee meetings. Here's some audio from that scene, as well as organizer Trey Anthony explaining first the grad students' pay demands and then the resolution being brought to the BOT.
Our next demand is pay graduate workers a living wage with fair contracts. So they must pay all graduate workers a living wage, which is defined as $3,200 a month in Orange County, commensurate with our status as full-time workers and scholars.
Wonder why we're full of rage?
It's because we're underpaid.
Wonder why we're full of rage?
It's because we're underpaid.
Wonder why we're full of rage?
It's because we're underpaid.
Basically instructing the student body president to pass along the resolution, which states that they recommend formally to the Board of Trustees that they come out in support of repealing the collective bargaining ban. So it's just for that one demand, but it is the most important demand.
If you want to hear more of UE150's current demands that they are presenting to the university and to the UNC system and to the state legislature, you can head to a conversation that Trey Anthony and other organizers had with us earlier this week. You can find that on chapelboro.com. Before we take a quick break, a couple of notes from the downtown part of Chapel Hill today. The local government alerted visitors and pedestrians to a sidewalk closure on East Rosemary Street, as specifically the stretch near 136 East Rosemary and the Wallace parking deck. The sidewalk renovation is part of the ongoing redevelopment on that street. The town also said it's going to have a scheduled outage of its parking ticket payment service and its park and ride permit purchase portal. It's a bit of a tongue twister there, but essentially starting Sunday and lasting through Friday, people will not be able to pay for parking tickets or buy those permits for Chapel Hill Transit online, as the town is updating its software for that service. The town did also say that people will still be given parking tickets if they are not paying for parking, so you'll have to keep that in mind, and they say you'll just have to email the town to pay and contest those tickets. And time now for a look at sports. We've got a big women's lacrosse game that is underway right now at Dorrance Field. The number 4 Tar Heels into the NCAA quarterfinals. They are hosting number 5 undefeated Denver. And at the moment, Carolina up, but it is early with a minute 48 to go in the first period. The Tar Heels are leading Denver 2-1. That is behind goals from Alyssa Long and Riley Casey. But Denver, a very good team. In fact, the only remaining undefeated team in the country. Both teams looking to get to the Final Four once again. Carolina has a very good record at home when playing in the NCAA tournament. They are 31-3 when playing in Chapel Hill during that. And I'm sure it is a packed house over at Dorrance Field. If you want to check out the game, it is on ESPNU and streaming on ACC Network Extra as well, if you want to check that out. We also have more details on chapelboro.com. Keep an eye on that score as the evening continues. And as I said, 2-1 Carolina as the second period is going to get underway in just a few minutes from Dorrance Field. Now, happening just a little bit later here on our airwaves, the Diamond Heels will take the field for their first game of the final regular season series. Carolina is on the road facing Clemson in a stretch of games critical for their seeding in the ACC tournament next week. Max Carlson will be taking the bump tonight, and the good news is the Heels seem to be back to full strength. They had several players who served a one-game suspension during their loss to Coastal Carolina earlier this week, but Carolina will need all the firepower they can get because this Clemson Tigers team is hot. They have won 9 straight games. But the Tar Heels, of course, looking to break that streak tonight. First pitch is a little after 6 o'clock. And again, you'll be able to hear it right here on your flagship station for Tar Heel Sports. Two other big results yesterday from other Carolina programs. The number 1 women's tennis team is back into the Final Four for the 4th consecutive season. They just continued to roll and punch their tickets by beating Texas in the quarterfinals last night. Have to imagine that was pretty sweet since it was a bit of a revenge match. Last year, it was the Longhorns who beat Carolina in the Final Four to end their season short of a national title. Next up, Carolina will play number 4 Georgia for a chance for another national title on Friday. Meanwhile, the men's golf team took care of business yesterday to have their own shot at trying to play for an NCAA championship. They clinched their spot after placing 3rd in the regional round in Salem, South Carolina. The number 2 Tar Heels shot a combined 43 under par. Pretty amazing that they only ended up in 3rd place after that. UNC 5th-year senior Ryan Burnett earned the individual title over the regional play with a score of 17 under par all by himself. He led wire to wire in the event, and that score actually set a school record, so congratulations to him. Now the Tar Heels will set their sights on the NCAA championship play, which starts May 26th in Arizona, and the men's team looking to build upon its program best 5th place finish last year. Turning to some high school sports news as we wrap up the sports report, the North Carolina High School Athletics Association shared the schedule for the men's tennis state title games this weekend. Why does that matter? Well, it's because the Carrboro Jaguars will be taking the court. Yesterday afternoon, Carrboro beat Fike High to advance to their second straight title game, and they'll be looking to win back-to-back 3A titles and doing it against the team that they happened to beat last year as well. Carrboro will match up with Hickory High School at 12:30 at the Burlington Tennis Center on Saturday, looking to add to their trophy case. Continuing with some local news here, we know our community in Orange County is pretty keyed into climate change and how to combat it at the local level. But a UNC professor is doing some work to try and help other local governments get an even better sense of how climate change is going to shape our regions in the years to come. During a recent Climate Thursday interview, Angel Hsu of the UNC Environmental Ecology Program shared information on the data-driven EnviroLab that she founded and talked about how technology like that can teach us more about combating climate change. Hsu did mention, though, that the main determining factor of inaction or action when it comes to climate policy and what to do is public concern. Here are some of her comments.
That's the million-dollar question, is how do you get people interested, motivated, inspired to act on an issue like climate change? And climate change, in the work that I do and also in the field that I study, we refer to it as a super wicked problem. And part of the reason why it's super wicked is because we're the ones causing the problem, and we also are trying to solve it. And it's hard because we have a tendency to irrationally discount the future. We think that, oh, in the future, they'll have better technology, they'll have more money to deal with the problem of climate change, and I'd rather enjoy driving my SUV and living in my huge house and flying all over the place for extravagant vacations today. And so I think initially when you think about Inconvenient Truth and former Vice President Al Gore, when he started several decades ago talking about climate change and making it his political platform, the message was overwhelmingly negative. It's like gloom and doom, the world is going to end, its house is on fire. And I think very quickly we realized that that's not the way to get people motivated to act on climate change. It's actually very paralyzing. And now there are new words introduced in the dictionaries, this eco-anxiety, climate change anxiety. These are new things that didn't exist a couple years ago. So I think now we're really realizing we have to flip the script.
Once again, that is Angel Hsu speaking there. And if you want to hear more of that conversation or read the conversation, you can check out a transcript of it by heading to chapelboro.com and our news section. Really fascinating discussion there about indeed how to flip that script, how to change some of that language and continue to figure out when it comes to climate change. One more piece of news from UNC campus here. The old well is going to be closed starting May 30th through the rest of the summer. No worries. There is nothing necessarily wrong with the well. There has been a temporary accessibility ramp around the well for the last couple of years, and UNC announced this week they're going to be adding in a much more permanent version of it and one that fits with the granite walkway that is existing at the old well. It does mean that they're going to have to make it actually a little less steep. They're going to be dropping the fountain a little lower, and to do all of that work, they're going to be closing down the area around the old well, although UNC has said that no trees, nothing like that around the old well is going to be altered in any way. But if you start to see some fences going up on May 30th around it, that is going to be what's going on, a more permanent granite walkway so ADA folks can get easily up. Everybody can get up and enjoy the old well. We have a design of what's going to be closed and kind of what more to know about the project shared on chapelboro.com if you want to check it out.